Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David
and Donald. Our topic this week is 2012. What are your thoughts and feelings of the year 2012 and possibly the end of the world?
2012 and possibly the end of the world, like the movie that came out a little while ago?
Yeah.
Where everything's blowing up and all that other stuff. Well, it's clear where the idea comes from. It's clear that people got caught up in that whole idea that the Mayan calendar ends. The magic date is, what, the winter solstice, right?
Yeah, I think it's December 22nd to 2012?
21st.
Or 21st.
Okay. Yeah. The solstice shifts on us all the time. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be December 21st, 2012. I think it's very reactionary. It's giving the Mayans a huge prop. It's giving them, you know, pat on the back that, you know, they knew something that we didn't, which It's very likely they probably knew a lot of things that we don't know.
Yeah.
We think we know a lot of stuff because we've got computers and cars and electricity and all that other stuff. And the Mayans like, you got that? We got a calendar. I don't know why this is making me laugh, but I wonder if like the Mayan kids sold the Mayan calendars door to door to raise money for their schools. You better hurry and buy one now because this thing's running out in 2012.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious.
That's the carnival of my mind. Anyway, so I think really what happened is the people really saw a lot of power in the Mayan calendar. I really do believe that there's a lot of power in the Mayan calendar. It's an amazing construct in and of itself. And a lot of people interpreted the end of the Mayan calendar as the Mayans' idea that the Mayans didn't continue the calendar after 2012 because they didn't think we'd be around or that we would exist.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's where the end date comes from.
Yeah, I've actually, for the longest time, you know, I was told the Mayan calendar, this is when it ends. They didn't make another one. But then I actually saw some shows where they went more into the culture of Mayan. They were so good with mathematics and watching the cycles of life on like a yearly and monthly and all these different cycles for all these different segments of time, mm-hmm. where they got to a point, I believe there was one show I saw where they got to a point where the calendar ended, and that was the ending of like a huge, huge, like 25,000 year cycle. Mm-hmm. And since they didn't have time to go beyond that before their culture, you know, disappeared, and then that's where they ended it. Whereas we come along as geologists and say, oh, look, they have really good knowledge of mathematics and solar movements and all this other stuff. They must know something that we don't. And, you know, part of me is thinking, no, they just didn't have time to start the new one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's ideas, too, that the Mayan calendar really just starts over.
Mm-hmm.
I always say to react to the end of the Mayan calendar, the end date of 2012, to react that as some apocalyptic event because the calendar's ending, to me is like having a wall calendar looking at December 31st and saying, you know what, there's no more pages after this one, so let's call it quits. Let's drive the car home.
Exactly, and I think that's the point I was trying to make, is the printing press just didn't go past December 21st to 2012.
Right, yeah.
Because they were like, we are so ahead of time. Oh, hey, what is that? A raiding army? Oh. Well, I guess this is as much of the calendar we got done so far.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe the priests were just like, you know what? We've got it covered. You know, I think 25,000 years is going to cover it.
It's, yeah.
To a great degree.
But now, that's the whole technical, you know, mathematical part of it. But a lot of people have taken it, you know, to the whole philosophical, metaphysical of the energy of a Mayan calendar. Here in the West, we have astrology. Oh, if you're a Scorpio, then you're like this. Well, Mayans also had not typically astrology, but it was a form of whatever day you were born on imbued you with certain energies. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I'm not well versed in this area. I've talked to many friends that are. They helped me to learn a little bit of it, at least enough to know that, yeah, this is something my brain just has a hard time wrapping itself around. Mm-hmm. I find that the spiritual aspect of it, from the little pieces that I do know about, is quite interesting. It's a lot different than Eastern or Western astrology put together. It's its own unique flavor, as it were.
Are you talking about the significance of each of the symbols and things like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wish I knew much more about it to where I could actually say, oh, well, red solar wind means this energy and that energy and this energy. And I know my sign for Mayan is white self-existing wind, mm-hmm. which, interestingly enough, has to do with communicating.
Interesting.
And one of the things that I love to do, you know, is communicate and talk. As people, listeners of this podcast and of people that have met me know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Someone's got to talk, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I always say. I don't always say that. I say that sometimes. Well, where did you actually get that information? Was there a place you go online where you plug in your birth date and time? And actually, they don't do time. They just do days, right?
Yeah, they just do days. The Mayan year, if I remember correctly, I think is 280 days or so, with one day that is there but not there, and it's considered a day out of time. The calendar is based on the Mayan Zolkin, and that's T-Z-O-L-K-I-N. And it's just a bunch of squares with, it looks like a weird pixelated Rorschach test.
Yeah.
But you go down through each of these squares, and each of these squares is a day, and each of these squares has a different energy to it. Basically, every year and a half, you have your solar birthday or your Mayan birthday. The day out of time, the crystal day, I believe is what they call it, is basically, yeah, we don't count this day. It's just a day where time is not, time doesn't matter, mm-hmm. you know, and I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, like our Gregorian calendar, where every day, every minute, every hour, every second has to fall in, and we can't have any time where there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
And to go from that to, this day doesn't work with our mathematics. It holds that like a hanging chad at the very end of the calendar. We're just going to make it go away.
Yeah, scrub it out, you know. Never speak of it again. Yeah.
I think this is when I was introduced to the concept of mechanical time versus organic time.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanical time is what most of the world is used to, you know. Hey, we have a clock for this. We do things at a certain interval. You know, the time is money. Everything has to happen at a certain rate, or else the whole system breaks down. And this is just how it is. Whereas my understanding from the Mayan belief and understanding of time is, hey, this is just where things are at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're going out hunting. Like, okay, when you're going to be back? When we get back,
yeah.
Or when we get something. Whereas if that was under the same concept of today, where instead of having all the technology that we have now, if we were under mechanical time in that situation, it'd be, hey, you're going out hunting? Yeah, when will you be back? Well, we're leaving at 9 a.m. in the morning, so we're going to hope to have something by 2. If we don't have something by 2, we're going to be coming home with nothing. And then we'll go out tomorrow, and we'll go out even earlier, like maybe 5 or 6, get an early start on the day. There's a difference in perception and of those two ways of looking at how to live time and whatnot.
Right.
I have friends, or a couple friends, who try to live outside of time and inside of time all at the same time. it's difficult because
it's like being Stretch Armstrong, I think.
Yeah, totally.
Feeling like that, at least.
Oh, totally. Because to have an organic time, and live in that way is really awesome. But to make a living in this culture and the world as we know it right now, you have to be in mechanical time. Mm-hmm. It's a constant, you know, shifting between mechanical and organic time, left and right, and it gets kind of interesting sometimes.
Well, yeah, I understand the idea of living outside of mechanical time, with trying to kind of experience the rhythms of time.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started really getting interested in all things esoteric, this is like 20 years ago or so, met a girl who was my teacher at the time of these things. She taught me to read tarot cards, and she was a practicing Wiccan. And I always said, well, how do I develop my psychic abilities? And she said, well, just pay attention to the cycles, to the rhythms.
Oh.
And everything does have a rhythm. Everything does have a cycle. There are some people that kind of go the hippie route of, well, I'm just going to live outside of time, dude, and I'm not going to look at a clock. But there's also the idea of just paying attention to their natural cycle of things, because no matter how much they want to live outside of a clock, you've still got the sun going up and going down in a very regular pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's interesting about the Mayan calendar is it does use those patterns too, because in fact, there's an illustration I saw that was really, really cool, because it looks like a big giant cog in a wheel, because they've got like the 13-day wheel,
mm-hmm.
and then that is integrated with a 20-day wheel, and then there's that 360-day wheel, and then there's another 5 days in there. So it's broken up into 18 days? I don't remember, but there's 13, 20, 18, 360, or there's 260. There's very significant wheels,
uh-huh.
and they all work together. And I think every 52 days, they kind of come back around. Certain parts come back around again.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it, and it was really cool. It was like looking at the inside of a clock. It was amazing. the way these gears fit together and the way the calendars synced up. Are you familiar with Carl Johan Kalman?
I'm not familiar with that name, no.
I can't remember. I think he was like a toxicologist or something really odd. And seriously, he's from Europe. I don't remember what country, but he kind of did a lot of studying of the long calendar and the Mayan calendar. And he found in it that it was less like a cycle and more like a pyramid or even a spiral, as it were.
Oh, wow.
That within each cycle are cycles. And each cycle breaks down to 13 of this and then 13, you know, and it gets kind of smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like those Russian dolls, you know, those nesting Russian dolls.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it makes me think of. He goes so far as to say, all right, you know what, seven days and six nights,
mm-hmm.
which equal the 13 components. Each day and night in the cycle is an actual period of consciousness coming into being.
Oh, okay.
So it goes as far as to say, all right, you know, all the way back from the beginning of the universe to coming up to 2012, you can break that into 13. Like, for example, according to this, you could pinpoint in each cycle where an evolutionary step occurred.
Oh.
And then you can break it down and you could look at, for example, you know, this and this, and then man comes along or humanity comes along at a certain point. You could break it down into religious epochs. You can break it down into historical major event epochs. The reason they say it's a pyramid or a spiral is that he believes that the Mayans saw time not as a circle, but as accelerating.
Oh, so it'd still be linear, just going faster forward?
Exactly.
Or?
Going faster forward.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I think the show, we may have seen the same show. I'm not sure. I think I saw mine on either History Channel or A&E. I remember when you were talking about the epochs, they had it set up where it seemed like every 70, 80 years or so, there was a cycle for a little while where wars would start, mm-hmm. and then wars would end. And this show was really good at saying, okay, the Mayan calendar, from what we understand, says that at this point in history, there should have been a war that started. Then they would go to, you know, written history, and written history would be like, oh, this was the French Revolution War. This was the beginning of that war. Then they'd go back a little bit further and like, oh, this is the Polynesian War. Mm-hmm. And then they'd go forward a little bit further and like, oh, this was the beginning of the Civil War for the Americans. And they were able to almost within probably about 2 to 3 years or so of when the Mayan calendar said a war should start or end, they were able to find a war that started or ended around that time.
Very interesting.
Now, you go out and look at a statistical or even a kind of a common sense view of, well, there's always seems to be a war somewhere in the world at any given time. Mm-hmm. And if you go looking for wars at any given time in history, you should be able to find one. What I found interesting about this show, it wasn't talking about there being a war. It was talking about there being a beginning of a war or the ending of a war.
Okay. Like a phase, like phases, like feuds. Oh, yeah.
It's like for American culture, we know that in the fall, we have a conscious understanding, a physical understanding, and an emotional understanding that there is going to be a lot of advertising for merchandising, for all kinds of anything you could possibly want. It's where businesses, you know, make up most of their sales for their year. That's when family visits each other and there's more travel. We have this psychic physical connection to this tradition. Mm-hmm. And I think this connects to what I was saying, where in the Mayan calendar, they saw these cycles of life to such a degree where they could say, oh, well, this happens every so much about this cycle where wars begin. So if we calculate this out year after year after year, we can almost start to see ahead of time, oh, we're coming up on this year, this time. This is supposed to be a time of turmoil, of possible wars, of disagreements and things of that nature.
Yeah. This ties back to what we were talking about last week with as far as life lessons go.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how you will experience something to accelerate your spiritual growth.
Yeah.
And then even before that, and you're talking about astrology and you're saying, okay, if you kind of know what you need to learn in this lifetime, the sooner you embrace that lesson and the sooner you go through it, the more accelerated your spiritual growth becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then we also said, well, you know, maybe there's a certain point in the life that you're supposed to experience this and you can't experience it really any sooner because you have to get to that point. Well, what I'm wondering about is with the Mayan calendar is if they saw us operating on cycles that are inherent in our DNA, inherent in the molecules that make up our DNA, inherent in the atoms and the cycles that the atoms spin in. The interesting thing about the 2012 date is they, astrologically, it's supposed to coincide with when our sun is in alignment with the galactic plane,
mm-hmm.
which occurs like some freaky number that I, you know, that you have to something to the something power, you know, with 52 digits behind it. But it's some crazy number. Once again, the cogs in the wheel. We talked about astrology, you know, how much effect can something happen? You've got planets that are spinning in a certain rhythm around the sun, like gears in a wheel. You've got the sun spinning around this Milky Way galaxy every 200 million years. Is it 200 million years, something like that. It takes to rotate all the way around. And now here we are in alignment with that. So how could we operate outside of all these crazy natural rhythms?
Because we're just that special. That's why.
we are. We are very special. Yeah, I think we're special sometimes. It seems to me that if the Mayans were looking at kind of our tendencies as far as our spiritual evolution, maybe that's what they're looking at. They're looking at, okay, you know, once we get to this point, this is what's going to happen. This is going to be the catalyst for our next growth. You know, there are going to be these wars that are going to be the catalyst for these next growths and things like that.
Yeah, maybe one of the reasons why the calendar ends in 2012, a cycle, a planetary alignment or something happens that they were able to foresee, where they basically saw everything is changing. It's like the nature of reality at this point is going to dramatically shift.
Mm-hmm.
We've been able to create this calendar that goes back thousands of years and goes forward thousands of years. But at this point, you know, in 2012, it's like the whole physics of this reality is going to shift in some way, shape, or form, where the cycles are going to diverge in a way that we have never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore we are unable to predict anywhere past this. We just know that these planetary alignments with all this stuff, with the whole solar system, with the whole universe, with everything else, is going to create a completely new dynamic of how things work.
Mm-hmm.
This could also be one of the reasons why a lot of people, me personally, for like the past 15, 20 years or so, has felt time has constantly been speeding up faster and faster and faster.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
It might be this point, this cosmological point where everything is speeding up to the end, and then it's going to hit that point in time and then become something else.
Mm-hmm.
This is a possibility, or at least one that I can see.
I think it's a strong possibility. If you look at, you can look at a lot of things. You can look at the Mayan calendar, and you can also look at just the human evolution. You can look at them both in tandem. If you look at the calendar, the Mayan calendar, and you take, they basically kind of take, they have the number 13, they have the number 20, and what they do is they, and the number 18, and what each, if you take it and divide each underworld, as they call them, which is just kind of a phase, if I don't want to cheapen it by saying phase.
Okay.
But I want to say a specific cycle, with each cycle being a 20th of the previous cycle, because it's accelerating. Time, it's accelerating.
Okay.
You can actually find correlating dates according to the Mayan calendar. If the Mayan calendar says, all right, a little over 16 billion years ago is when matter first came into being, right? And then they say, all right, now you take that, according to their formula, according to their calendar, the next underworld is when life formed on the planet, which is 800 billion years. And then you go 40 billion years where you start to see, and then another 2 billion years where humans came around, another 100. And these are all mathematically divisible into shorter and shorter cycles. Now, if you look at it even from a technological standpoint, look at how long it took from us to go from spoken language to writing. From writing to actually the Industrial Revolution was shorter than that period.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The Industrial Revolution until technology in 1999 when technology broke open. And now look at technology just from, where are we, 11 years later?
Yeah.
How much each phase and each jump technologically we've gotten has been quicker than the last one and shorter than the last one. Until you get to this point where 2011 is supposed to be the very last one, like in September 2011. And then you go to October 2012. Now it's only like just a few months apart, where it was, you know, years and then a few less years and a few months. So showing our evolution and our cognizance and our ability to communicate and us kind of becoming unified through technology and us becoming more of a global consciousness, the idea that a lot of people believe is that it's not that life ends for us on this planet. It's that life as we know it ends on this planet, which is what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping into a whole new realm of consciousness.
And from that, I've heard numerous different ideas where if you go to the psychic metaphysical arena, the planet itself is going to phase shift, where there's going to be a lower frequency Earth and a higher frequency Earth. And those that are able to live in the higher frequency Earth are going to be there. And the people that are of lower frequency are going to continue to be in the lower frequency. The difference is going to be a minute phase shift where you might be sitting around one day and all of a sudden there you are and half the world just disappears. Mm-hmm. Well, taking it out of a Christian concept, it's not a matter of people are going to heaven or going to be judged or anything like that. It's just literally the people that disappear have a higher energy, spiritual vibration or frequency to where a lower frequency is no longer useful, and they just continue on and it shifts over like that. Mm-hmm. I find that kind of getting out there into the New Age area. Another belief is a magnetic pole shift, mm-hmm. where our magnetic north switches to our magnetic south and everything else goes crazy with that as well. Mm-hmm. Whichever one you want to believe in or look at, you know, is personal preference. I'm kind of sitting here going, you know, something is supposed to happen. We don't know exactly what. People are coming up with all kinds of ideas. I take the stance of, hey, let's just see what happens, and it may not be that big of a change,
yeah.
or it may be a huge change. It, you know, back in 1999, there was the whole Y2K scare, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's like, we have so little time to fix all the computers in the whole wide world, or else everything could go completely wrong, and banks and our economy could just crash, and basically we'll be living in caves in less than a few months. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't happen. Computer people was like, here's a patch, install the patch,
yeah.
set your time like this. And people are like, oh, okay, well, that only took 3 seconds, and we saved the world. Woohoo!
Yeah. There's going to be a 2012 patch that we upload to your consciousness, basically. Yeah. I'm freaking out because my concept of time is all out of whack. Just download this, and you'll deal. You know, you'll be in past, present, future all at once. Don't worry about it.
So you're saying we're going to have to talk to universal tech support?
Oh, God, that's scary. Depending on who's... Is that outsourced to the Pleiadians or whatever?
I have no idea, but... I mean, who does the universe outsource to for their tech support?
I know, right? The multiverse?
Yeah. I don't know. I have enough time, you know, dealing just with my native language, much less accents of all the other languages on the world.
Yeah.
And now we're going into a whole universal thing. Oh boy.
Universal is not universal.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I know. It's all about light. It's a matter of the frequency of light is a language. So therefore, if you get blind talking to universal tech support, well, at least your problem is fixed. Now you have a whole nother problem.
The problem with talking to universal tech support is that, you know, they're talking at the speed of light. They're going too fast for me. I can't keep up with them. Slow down. Slow down. I'm still trying to click on my, you know, past life here. Yeah. Now there's tangential for you.
Oh, wow. That came out of nowhere. That's really kind of fun. I like the whole idea of a universal tech support. It's like, hey, I'm stuck in my ascension process. Oh, hold on. Tweak. Okay, first off, have you overcome your fear? Some of it. Okay, move your the overcome fears over to the right side of your aura, and then bring your unresolved fears down to through your third and fourth chakra.
Oh my! Then... Oh wow, that's a ride. That's a wild ride.
And when's your birthday? Oh, we're not even talking about that. Which,
you know,
life?
That might change. Maybe all our birthdays are going to change on 2012. That will really screw everything up. You know, I used to be a Gemini, and now I'm a Sagittarius. And well, you know, actually, with the 2012 thing, here's the. What I find so interesting about the whole 2012 idea, like the movie and the Earth's breaking open. I didn't see the movie. I don't really like the whole kind of terror instilling fearmonger reactionary thing. So mm-hmm. I did not see the movie. But the idea of the whole world coming to the end, 2012 thing, which to me seems so hard to grasp personally, is mm-hmm. that nothing happens all of a sudden. No, it just doesn't. If you look at the greatest atrocities and the greatest wars, there was a great flood at one time, history shows. All mm-hmm. these things that happened, all of a sudden it wasn't like a calendar page flipped and then boom, the world was, you know, 200 feet higher than it was everywhere else. Oh, yeah. Everything is a very gradual process. And I do believe that what we're coming into with the possibility of of our own evolution in 2012, we're already going through it. Mm-hmm. But it's just so transparent to us, because look at kids who, to them, they don't even know life without a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know life without phones. My grandmother knew life without phones, but she didn't know life without horse and buggy or something. I don't know. You see the point I'm making? It's always a very gradual process. It's not a flip of a switch. At December 20th, we're like, all right, you know, make sure your water rations are in place, tie yourself to the nearest telephone pole. I don't see that as really, I don't see it as a switch flipping. I don't really see it as a page turning that way. I just think that that's the day where we're going to be at a certain point by this day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, evolutionarily, spiritually, you know, there's one idea that our concept of time is going to broaden massively, that we will be able to see kind of more than just a linear time fashion. We'll understand kind of like what we were talking about last week. So there's some interesting ideas. People talk about what's going to happen. I talk about what's happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm one of the other theories that I have heard about. It's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a new life that we created. It's the whole AI, artificial intelligence, AI, computers that have reached a certain level of processor power where they actually become self-aware and therefore become a consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You go back in the 90s where we were having this huge explosion of processing power, where it was following Moore's law, whereas I believe Moore's law is every 6 months technology doubles itself, or 12 months or something like that. Well, you know, in 1995 you could get the top of line computer, and by 1996 it was almost completely out of date.
Mm-hmm.
Early into the 2000s that still was the case. For me personally, I've noticed that it seems like in the past 5-ish, maybe 6 years or so, computers that you bought, you know, half a decade ago can still keep up with the technology of today, like the broadband internet. Not the most latest game or anything like that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But basic computing of internet and email and stuff of this nature. I have almost a 6-year-old desktop that I use that still can just totally kick butt on pretty much anything I want it to do, and I don't play a lot of games, so I don't need it to do that. I find it really exciting that, you know, you go back 15 years, you know, you buy a computer, and within a year or two later, you couldn't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past half decade to the past decade or so, you can have a computer that could still work and function, maybe not like a new computer, obviously. There's a big difference between a single core, dual core, and quad core, and now I hear they're coming out with a hexa-core with 6 cores in it. Mm. There's a lot more processing power, but at the same time, there's the same amount of stuff that people do with their computers, and one of the main ones they do is communicate through the internet, which means broadband and of some sort is almost essential. If you're still on dial-up at this point in time, you are really missing out on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you're not listening to this show very likely. So.
Oh, yeah. And even web pages, they have so much information from the scripts that they write, the flash that they have in there, all the coding that they do, that to actually try to go to a website these days with dial-up, it'll take you forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the technology for sure is definitely increasing constantly, year after year after year. You go back 100 years, we were just barely learning how to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And now, a century later, we're sitting there going to space and like, okay, well, we went to the moon. Yeah, we can go to space. No big deal. Hey, how about going to another planet? Well, we can figure that out. We've sent crafts that way. We could probably start sending people that way too. Where, like, just a little over 100 years ago, people were like, okay, Orville and Wilbur Wright, how are we going to get this thing up in the air?
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! It was up in the air for 3 seconds. This is cool. Let's go for 6 seconds. I also heard back a long time ago, I can't remember what the source was, we're also increasing our understanding and enlightenment as spiritually,
mm-hmm.
and evolving at a pretty much the same type of rate. And the level that I heard back then, I think this was back in the late 90s, was that the typical rate for having a higher form of enlightenment or a thought of enlightenment that led to a higher frequency, a higher vibratory rate of your spirit and soul, which of course would then peter out until the rest of the consciousness, would be roughly one every 100 years or so.
Okay.
And then it started speeding up where it'd be two every 100 years or so. And it continued on and continued on and continued on. Well, what I heard the rate was in the late 90s was somebody somewhere in the world was having an enlightened thought or understanding every day. And we were talking about this whole speed of time, you know, going faster forward and speeding up and speeding up. Well, if that's what I heard back in the late 90s, imagine what it is now. We're probably at the moment now where somewhere in the world, somebody is having an enlightened moment or an enlightened thought, gaining some sort of universal knowledge almost every second.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2012 is not the end of the world like so many people are talking about. Maybe it's a matter of that's the point where everybody in the whole wide world hits a mass consciousness for enlightenment instantaneously. And there's no every few seconds or every few days or every few weeks or months or days or years or whatever, where everybody on the whole world is actually having the same enlightened understandings of universal knowledge instantly. Kind of like a huge download of, okay, you're a planet. You people have reached a certain level of understanding. Here's the rest of what we didn't tell you.
Well, if you look at let's look at those different scenarios that we talked about. You talked about everybody reaching kind of a universal level of consciousness or kind of receiving information universally the way they didn't before, because you talked about kind of the intermittent enlightenment accelerating until it almost becomes simultaneous.
Mm-hmm.
We also had a scenario where we talked about where the vibrations of people might accelerate to the point to where we would perceive differently than people I'm not saying we, you, and me. I'm just saying people, would be, our vibration would be accelerated to the point where there would be some of us whose vibrations didn't, and we would no longer be able to perceive each other, or one couldn't perceive the other very well. We mm-hmm. also talked about the physical things like a magnetic pole shift and things like that. What scenarios do you see as being likely or realistic or even what you would hope to see?
See, that's one of those areas where there are so many possibilities that people have come up with that I see as probable in one way or another. Not all of them, obviously. That I am literally just basically saying life always finds a way to continue in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of what happens, life is going to find a way to continue. And I'm leaving it pretty much at that. Now, what I'd hope to see, what I'd like to see, is, I guess, more of a utopian society where, or actually world understanding where, you know, there's less argument. There's more of cooperation. Where if one country is having trouble in one area, the rest of the world helps them to come back up. Their arguments are taken care of, their disagreements are taken care of in a much more reasonable way, as opposed to, hey, I don't like what you did. I don't like what you did. Mm-hmm. I got guns too. We fight, mm-hmm. you know? Instead, like, I don't like what you did. Oh, yeah, I don't like what you did. We'll have a chess game. Okay, whoever wins it takes this land,
well,
or whatever.
You know, the thing is that what I think what that would take is that would take a certain reaching of a level of consciousness. Really, when we break it down, all of the conflicts we have that we deal with as far as a national level, even on a personal level, are just dealing with people not feeling like they have any power,
mm-hmm.
the acquisition of power. Interestingly enough, the people who are able to wield power the most are the people who often have the least amount of power or believe they are the most powerless.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you always, it's like drinking water out of the sea. It's just going to make you more thirsty. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got all this water, you know, water everywhere, and I drop to drink. It's that same idea. I've got all this water, but you can't drink it because it's not quenching your thirst. And I think there's a certain powerlessness of not knowing how much power we really have as individuals, not knowing who we are, is what kind of drives that, those conflicts and those the national boundaries and the clash of idealisms and ideologies. What I'm hoping to see in this whole evolution that we're going to coming into the 2012 moment is what I'm hoping to see is that we get to a point where we realize our interconnectedness, mm-hmm. how integrally woven the fabric of our existence is with the other. And I think that what we're seeing is the technological advance. A lot of people think the technological advance is the actual indicator of our advance. I think it's a byproduct of how we're advancing. It's a byproduct of the fact that we are becoming more global. You and I are on opposite sides of the country right now, and we're able to talk to each other in real time. Now, go back in time 500 years and tell somebody that. They're like, wizardry, madness, you know. It's just two people cannot be in two different places and know what the other and have a conversation and communicate.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, NASA with trips to the moon and, you know, you can actually communicate pictures and audio from the Earth to the moon in almost instant time. Now, pictures from crafts that have, you know, gone over to other planets like Saturn and Mars and a place like that, there is a time delay for the radio signals to get back to Earth and everything. But even then, like what you're saying, 150 years ago, they were just barely getting the telegraph to work really well. Mm-hmm. And now we can actually talk to people on the moon in relatively real time. And if we wait a minute, we can get pictures from Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the whole idea of technology being a byproduct of our evolution, you look at the social networking sites that have come up in the past 7-8 years. You had MySpace. Now it's 2010, and MySpace has been around for a few years, but it's pretty much going on, you know, it's pretty much on life support. Yeah, a lot of people don't hang out on MySpace hardly at all anymore.
I wouldn't mind being the one to pull the plug if
yeah.
DNR on that.
Do not resuscitate. Mm. Totally. Yeah. But then you look at Facebook. It's almost the mid of 2010, and Facebook, I believe, was started in fall of 2006. So maybe three and a half, 4 years almost, where that has been around and has over a few million people worldwide. Now, why did people jump so quickly from MySpace to Facebook? And I can't remember what was before MySpace because my memory doesn't go that far back, apparently. Why did people jump so quickly to that? Because it was a much quicker and easier way to talk to people. And it's like you didn't have to sit there and blog paragraph after paragraph of your day or your week or whatever. You only had to say is, I'm having fun. It's sunny out.
Yeah.
Yay. You know, and then of course that was too long there and they came out with Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, and Twitter was like, you could go anywhere and it's just, you just had to text a message to your website and I'm at the mall. I'm having fun. Yay.
Yeah. I know it seems so minor, all these things. You know, it seems so minor to say, I just ate a sandwich and I forgot to put butter on it. I mean, to post that on a Twitter a message, it seems kind of trivial to do that. But I think what's going on is that all of this is staging. Because all this, what that's doing is you're decreasing space and you're decreasing time. You and I are basically having a communication. We've reduced the amount of space that takes to get one message from one side to the other side of the country, and thus we've reduced the amount of time. So we've got to get used to living in a area of instant communication before we can take the next step. Once we're used to this, then the next step seems painless. And this is why I say the 2012, you know, one side of the earth cracking and swallowing the other side is not going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen. You know what? If I'm wrong, I owe you $5. You know, if we all cease to exist, I owe you $5. But I don't think it's going to happen that way. So
like what you said, when you're talking about, I had a thought of, if we are coming to a point where we're becoming more and more instant communication, then you take it more to an evolved level, where it is my understanding and my belief that the more evolved you become, the more of these ESP psychic skills and gifts that, you know, you're able to use. So if you're becoming more and more connected year after year after year, after month after day, and hearing, okay, so your friend that you met one time back in high school is on your Twitter, and you're listening to about his lunch and how he enjoyed it. Well, if we get to a point where we no longer need the internet, we become so telepathically connected with everybody, those types of things aren't going to wait for us to be like, okay, I will log into my account and see who said what. No, those things, those types of pieces of information will, you know, will just instantly be there. Like, oh, Jim has had a good lunch today and he's really enjoyed it.
Exactly.
And maybe what this faster forwarding of communication is allowing is getting us to a point where it's training our consciousness and our brains and our physical limitations to actually start being able to take in that information from a more telepathic, empathic way faster and faster and faster. We have our five senses, and our brain works really hard to, you know, keep track of what's all the information that's coming in from those. You add in a constant stream of extrasensory perception, your spirit, your brain, and every part of you has to work that much harder to keep everything in order, or else you go mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, and if you did all of a sudden find yourself in a nice cloudy day in June in the year 2010, transported from 500 years ago, you would go mad. It would be maddening, because this reality is not, you could not accept this reality. It's all too, you would go insane.
Yeah.
So we've got to gradually introduce it to where you can accept it as a reality. And then, well, you know, if it's so easy to instantly communicate with one another, then it won't be so out of reach to be able to do it without, you know, having to use a computer to do it, for example.
Have you seen the movie The Fifth Element?
Yes.
Now imagine being plucked out of 1950s rural America and all of a sudden thrown into the major city in, you know, The Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. That, I think that's right along with what you're saying. It would be sensory overload, for one. Two, you wouldn't know what to do. It's like everything is moving way, 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 way too fast. When I started driving, when I was learning how to drive to get my driver's license, my mom told me one time, it's just like, well, yeah, your grandmother doesn't drive because, well, for her, going over 25 miles an hour was speeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then with my parents, it's like, oh, 50 miles an hour, that's about right. 50, 60 miles an hour, that's right. Now we have our interstates now in some parts of the country. If you decide to go a little over the speed limit, you're going 80, 90 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's insane. And so the whole 2012 possibility of what it is, what it could be, and what it might be, I think what we'll have to do for the most part is just wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. You know, to live in fear and respond in a fearful way, and maybe something doesn't even happen, is kind of, it just seems kind of foolhardy. Let it happen. Let it do what it's going to do.
Oh, yeah. We'll know when we get there.
Exactly. Fantastic. All right. Well, that wraps up this conversation for the week. So this is David.
And this is Donald.
And we wish all of you wonderful and happy 2010. 2 years to go.
Till 2012.
Da, da, da.